Welcome to Intersection Live, the tax and accounting profession's premier podcast source. Provided by the CPA Technology Advisor at the intersection of technology and public accounting. The Intersection Live podcast series is brought to you by ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. Intelligent Business Ideas to Go is sponsored by CCH, a Wolters Kluwer business.
This is Intelligent Business Ideas to Go, Episode 9, Tax Planning After the Election. Hello, Greg LaFollette for Intersection Live, podcast series of the CPA Technology Advisor. Today is November 19th, and we're recording Intelligent Business Ideas to Go, episode number 9, and I have a really interesting guest. We're going to have some fun today. I'm visiting today with Mark Luscom, and Mark is an attorney and a CPA and a principal tax analyst with CCH. And Mark, you've been watching what happens in the tax world from high atop the towers out there in Riverwood for a long, long time, right?
That's right. I've been here about 13 years, and it's always interesting. We've been through several administrations, and they make a lot of promises on the campaign trail, and it's actually been somewhat surprising how many of these campaign promises have actually gotten enacted, in at least in the tax context, in the first year in office. So that bodes well for Obama, I think. So,
well, it'll be interesting. You know, 2 weeks ago today, we woke up and candidate Obama, Senator Obama, was now President-elect Obama, and there's lots of different things going on. And over the top of that is all of these issues about the bailout, the economy, and all the things that are going on there. I know, we don't have all the time in the world. There's a lot of things to talk about, but I've got a couple of things that I want to ask you about specifically. Then we'll just kind of go into all the other things we want to talk about. But all of the issues around the economy, seems to me there are a couple. I know Obama has floated an idea that would allow penalty-free early withdrawals from IRAs and 401ks, and actually making this retroactive to January 1 of 08. I love retroactive tax law. That makes things really exciting. Then on the flip side, McCain was talking about, and I don't know where this ever went, but some idea about temporarily excusing RMD, required minimum distributions, for IRAs and 401ks for 70-and-a-half-year-olds, a horrible time to have to sell into this market and take money out. So you got both of those things. Either one of those going to pass? What are the tax effects? What should we, as practicing accountants, CPAs, and EAs today, be saying to our clients? How do we come out heroes on this?
Well, on the second of those items, the one from McCain, the suspension of the tax on required minimum distributions, actually Obama liked that idea well enough that he also picked up that one. So they are both still in play in Obama's tax plans. Now, as you may have been following, the lame duck Congress is discussing a possible economic stimulus plan before they adjourn dismiss this Congress, and a plan was put together for this economic stimulus that would include neither of these tax breaks. So it sounds like whether or not that passes, if either one of these things is going to be enacted, it's going to be in 2009, and if it covers 2008, it will have to be retroactive.
Sure.
I would say that the chances are reasonably good. I mean, we've had a history of presidents Reagan, George W. Bush and Clinton getting through their tax agendas pretty much intact in their first few months in office, and with Obama perhaps having a bigger mandate than at least anyone since Reagan, then that's that bodes well for him. So I think probably the issue that accountants are going to be wrestling with, though, is whether you can rely on a retroactive enactment in your planning for 2008. And I guess I'd be a little uncomfortable telling a client, go ahead and do a penalty-free IRA distribution. It's probably not going to be subject to the penalty, at least up to $10,000. I think if you need to do the distribution, do it, and hope for the penalty being relaxed. But I wouldn't necessarily rely on it. I don't have quite that confidence level. So.
Right. So, in the flip side of this, I assume that you'd say the same thing to the 72-year-old who says, "Look, I'm required to withdraw money in 2008. I've got an RMD of, $15,000, whatever the number is. Do I have to take it out, or is there going to be forgiveness?" I'd be pretty nervous as a practitioner, I think, saying, "Yeah, just don't bother to take it out."
Yeah, I agree with that. And there also in the Obama camp has been floated the concept of either an alternative approach to the required minimum distributions, if for those who can afford not to take it, to suspend the requirement to take it, but for those who really rely on that required minimum distribution, to have an exemption of that distribution as well,
to be able to accelerate it.
Accelerate, right?
Right.
So I mean, I agree with you. I think I would probably have clients go ahead and take any required minimum distributions, and then just hope for the best in terms of the tax impact of that. So.
Sure. So, I mean, on the other side of this, and that covers all the people who have different circumstances because of the economic upheaval. On the other side, we have people who have assets outside of tax advantage, tax sheltered arrangements, just in general investment accounts. Do you see anything happening on some level of additional deductibility of capital losses, which would help people say, you know what, maybe I'm going to go ahead and sell into this market and recognize my loss with the idea that maybe I'll have an accelerated deductibility rather than just a carry forward?
Well, the McCain camp did during the campaign float the idea of increasing that to $3,000 annual limit to something like $15,000, but the Obama camp did not pick up on that one. I think there's a little concern about the I think the capital gain situation may be playing too much in favor of the wealthy in terms
Right.
of the investor community. So they did not pick up on that one. I suppose related to that, Obama has discussed a certain playing around with the capital gain rates in terms of raising the rate maybe on higher income people and eliminating capital gains on investments in small businesses and that sort of stuff. So I suppose there is some opportunity to think about maybe an increase in the loss, but maybe with only for a certain income group or something like that. But I haven't seen him propose it yet.
Right. Okay, so well, speaking of businesses, there's a bunch of business tax relief things floating around. Again, we've got the idea of a jobs tax credit. We all remember how much fun those are, and we can argue about how effective they are.
Right.
In my personal experience, I've watched people get that credit, and I'm not sure it ever created any job, but it certainly rewarded people who were going to create the jobs anyway.
Right.
That personal observation. What do you know about that? How do you see these things happening?
Well, I think I guess the. Probably every little bit helps, and we've had this work opportunity tax credit for an ever expanding category of people at some sort of viewed as some sort of disadvantage in the job market, and they've kept adding to those categories. And I've talked to accounting firms that actually are getting in, in some of these special client support areas, are actually getting into the sort of business of doing sort of payroll audits and looking at employee categories to see if they're maximizing their ability to utilize things like the work opportunity tax credit. So I think there is some interest in there from that category. And
sure.
And this one would be much broader in its application, and then therefore perhaps much easier to apply. You wouldn't have to identify particular types of categories of potential employees to hire. It would basically apply to all new hires, as long as you could establish it was an additional full-time employee. And then what he's talking about is basically a $3,000 refundable credit, at least for 2009 and 2010.
So, and again, on just like we had on the 401k IRA issue, we had both the top and the bottom question. On this one, with the new jobs, we got new jobs credit, but we also have people talking about extending unemployment benefits and playing around with the taxation of those benefits. I'm not clear on has that been fleshed out, what they're talking about on how they might do that.
Well, they still have to, I think, work out the details of how that would interact with the states. But they have talked about it just being a temporary tax-free benefit for 2008 and 2009. Again, probably the retroactive issue is not a big issue there, because people eligible for unemployment benefits are going to take them, and if they turn out later to be tax-free, so much the better.
Sure.
But I think they are still working out the details on that. Typically, we when a new president comes in, we don't get start getting these details really until after the State of the Union message,
sure.
and then the budget comes out that really starts fleshing out some of these details. So
there's not probably a lot of planning opportunity. You're not going to suggest to someone that they go out and lose their job so they can get unemployment that may or may not be taxable. That's probably not a real good plan.
Right. I mean, it also, though, sort of somewhat related for people who've been getting unemployment benefits for a while and included in this bill currently before Congress that isn't clear it's going to pass, would be some extension of jobless benefits.
So. Right. So all of these things, and we as tax professionals, we all understand as we're watching the politicians talk about tax and tax policy and things that they're going to do. If I were president, I'd do this. And we all, of course, immediately start thinking about the tax ramifications. And I've been watching all of the politicians talk about these different moratoriums on foreclosures and renegotiating of loans and how all this is going to work. And I sit there with all of these visions of the IRS and arguing with them about loan forgiveness income and how that's going to how that might work. Do you see that as a landmine coming up?
Well, I think you do have to be careful. I mean, for example, we've got this mortgage debt forgiveness provision that was already enacted at the end of 2007, and yet just very recently, part of the initiative was to try to pressure lenders to renegotiate lower interest rates, and that's all well and good, but people do have to realize that a lowered interest rate I guess the good thing on that, it won't produce a mortgage debt forgiveness, but it's
right.
not going to engage the provisions of the Debt Forgiveness Relief Act, because that really has to be mortgage debt that's forgiven, not interest that's forgiven. But also, I mean, you've got people doing short sales, and I mean, where you've got basically, the sale price isn't going to cover the mortgage, so you get the consent of the mortgage lender just to sell the home yourself, and then whatever proceeds you get goes to the mortgage, and then the lender agrees to walk away from the balance. I mean, you've got issues there about, you know, just in some of these cases, just how much is the debt that's been forgiven? And then you've got also issues about, will the lender really forgive the debt? You can't just assume. You've got to look at state law and get the really the lender to actually say that they're walking away from that debt. They might not do so immediately, and you don't have mortgage debt forgiveness until it's actually been forgiven.
Exactly. And by the time that happens, we're back at the very, very end, way after all this has happened. We're trying to make hard-boiled eggs out of omelets at that point, trying to figure out what was going on. So, Mark, tell me a little bit about we'll go back, we'll flip back over to the 401ks and the Roths and things. My client comes walking in and says, "So next year." You know, in 2009, should I be funding a traditional Roth, traditional or a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA or a 401k? Should I be tax advantaged or not? What's the rule of thumb based on what you see coming?
Well, I guess I would first make sure I've talked to the client about their income category. Hopefully, all of my clients have wonderful incomes, well in excess of $100,000.
So they can pay my fee.
And assuming they're in that category, then they cannot do a Roth conversion until 2010, when that $100,000 income limit goes away. But for them, it probably may make sense to look at doing a traditional non-deductible IRA. It doesn't give them any immediate advantage, but that at least increases the possible kitty available to roll over to a Roth in 2010 when that income limit goes away.
Good point.
Now, for the individual who is under 100,000, or maybe can maneuver their affairs so they can get under 100,000 in 2008 or 2009, then that creates the possibility of doing some Roth conversions currently, and that might make some sense because of the low valuation in the current stock market that those assets would have. Obviously, when you do a conversion from a traditional IRA to a Roth, you're taxed on the value, you know, in excess of any basis you might have in that account on the value of the date of conversion. And in a depressed market like we're in right now, that's going to be a relatively low value and a relatively low tax. So, it might be a good point to convert.
Right. So, with the both the tax side and the economics, you think that defined benefit plans could come back? I mean, we used to do those all the time, and they've just all but disappeared.
Well, I think from the employee perspective right now, they're looking more attractive. Just you can see that a little by looking at what happened to McCain's proposals, and then going back to even Bush's proposals of privatizing Social Security. No one talked about that once the stock market started tanking, because that doesn't look so attractive. And the and certainly the 401k accounts, you know, the plus there. Well, that's the employees' money. They can do with it as they will, and if the market goes up, it's good for them. If it goes down, it's bad for them. And so now it's bad for them, and those fixed obligations under those defined benefit plans are looking pretty good. But I don't think they're looking any better to the employers. You can just look at you know, the automakers and those fixed pension and retirement health care obligations are just making you know, the big three automakers a lot less competitive than some of their foreign competitors. So, industry just doesn't want to get back into the defined benefit plan situation, I don't think. So.
Well, and in the closely held world that most practitioners live in, you know, there's obviously extreme rules regarding you know, what we do with defined benefits in closely held groups, but you know, those are the clients that we work with, and all, you know, so compensation planning, another huge thing. Are we going to, you know, we used to have all sorts of compensation arguments with the service, excess comp on the C-Corp side and insufficient comp on the S-Corp side. Now we've got Social Security, probably pretty significant Social Security increases coming on the upside. What do we tell our clients? What should we be doing here?
Well, I think certainly in the context of Social Security increases, I mean, what Obama is talking about is maybe sort of a surtax for people earning over $250,000 of something in the 2 to 4% range. So there would be sort of a gap, the present point at which Social Security taxation starts phasing out is around, I think it's 106,000, 107,000,
right.
And so you'd still have this income level in which there would be no additional Social Security tax paid, and then once you reach the 250,000 point, this 2 or 4% sort of add-on would come into play. One thing that's being talked about there is, you know, maybe that's an argument that would push toward S corporations as opposed to partnerships or limited liability companies.
Exactly.
And I say that because you've in an S corporation context, you can define what is compensation better and put better limits on it than you can in a often in a partnership or LLC context, where really the FICA compensation is basically the net of whatever is left over after deducting expenses.
Because we go over to the aggregate theory, right?
Right.
The conduit theory. So, well, that's interesting. So maybe in terms of what's sexy, maybe S corps and C corps will be hot new vehicles, and LLCs won't be the be all and end all.
Yeah. Well, surprisingly, if you look at the IRS statistics, S corporations have never gone out of style. Really, they're still extremely popular, but this would be something pushing back in their favor, right?
Right. So on that same side, as we're talking about the all of the business stuff, there are a bunch of business tax relief things and some revenue raisers. How do we steer our clients there? What are the big things coming?
Well, on the business side, unfortunately, Obama's probably been a little less specific on both the relief side and the revenue raiser side. He's sort of talked generally about lowering the corporate rate from the present 35%, and there's some international pressure to do that. We're generally viewed as having the second highest corporate tax rate in the world right now, and some people feel that puts us at a competitive disadvantage. So he has given at least a lip service to lowering the corporate tax rate, but he sort of ties it generally to closing corporate loopholes. So it's also been suggested maybe it only lower corporate rates for companies that, tied to his jobs program, that have startup businesses or expand operations domestically.
Right.
And the pay for that, closing corporate loopholes, some things that have been mentioned would be maybe some further restrictions on the deductibility of CEO pay. We've already got the $1 million limit on non-performance-pay compensation, and we've, you know, this economic stimulus legislation that just passed put some compensation limits on people who get buyout help from the investment help from the government. But I think Obama's maybe talking about some further limits on even performance-based compensation going forward as part of the loophole closers. Other things being talked about maybe in the international arenas are sort of punish people perceived as moving jobs overseas would be getting into things like limits on the use of foreign tax credits and maybe an inability to deduct expenses until income is repatriated back to the U.S. Some things like that have been kicked around in the past.
Right. So if I've got a corporation right now today and I've got E&P, am I thinking that that maybe some dividends might make sense?
Well, I think that's certainly possible. I mean, in the corporate context, you're probably not looking at any rate higher than 35%. But you are looking at the possibility, perhaps in the future, of if you're worried about your shareholders, of the dividend rate going up in the future from 15 to perhaps 20%, along with the capital gain rate. So a dividend might look more attractive this year than it might next year. So.
Right. So, you know, the normal year-end plan is that we say to our small business clients, run out and pay every single bill that you can imagine here in the month of December, and for God's sakes, don't stop at the post office.
Right.
Now, I didn't actually say that out loud, but right. I mean, that's always been, you know, we accelerate deductions and defer income. Are we kind of looking at maybe betting just the opposite way right now?
Well, I think that's possible. If you're a small business owner that thinks you're, certainly in this $250,000 income range that is likely to be in Obama's new restored 36 and 39.6% bracket. Those rates, if enacted next year, are likely, I would say, to be retroactive to January 1. It's less clear that the 20% capital gain rate he's proposing would be retroactive. They usually, on capital gains, like to give a period of opportunity for taxpayers to, you know, prepare for the increase by selling assets before it becomes effective, and that creates a lot of government revenue. So they don't usually make capital gains rates retroactive, but they might make the new marginal rates retroactive, which would mean that it might make sense, rather than postponing income to next year, to accelerate income to this year and maybe postpone some deductions.
Right. So you forget what you ever knew about 179 and bonus depreciation, maybe.
Right.
boy, that's going to be hard to do, because you know we've done that so long that it's just kind of it's kind of built in. So what about let's talk about AMT. I love watching politicians talk about AMT, because my guess is that 40% of them don't even know what the acronym stands for, and if they did, they certainly wouldn't know what it meant. The whole AMT structure is at risk. Is that fair? It's certainly being examined, right?
Well, I would say that's fair. I mean, a lot of people are questioning whether it's fulfilling its purpose. I mean, originally it was aimed at about 140,000 high-income taxpayers. Now it's hitting about 4 million taxpayers, and if they didn't do the patch, which they just did this year, it would have hit another 20 million or so. And it's not impacting primarily, as a general rule, the highest income taxpayers, because they often have enough income taxed at the 35% rate that they don't have to worry about the AMT. So it's more people in the probably the highest group of people is people with incomes in the 200,000 to 500,000 range, as far as the highest percentage cut by the AMT, and then lower percentages above and below that. So
if I'm a clever practitioner, and I've got clients with AMT tax credit carryforwards, should I be talking and having a conversation? What happens if we pull all the pins out of this AMT structure? What do you think is going to happen to those tax credit carryforwards? They just evaporate one day?
Well, I would think they would be allowed to continue. And in fact, I suppose if Obama got his way and restored the 36 and 39.6% rates, that might increase your regular tax enough that your clients would over the next few years be able to utilize those carryover credits, because your regular tax rate is that much higher than what your AMT tax would have been. Greg, that does raise a point about one conversation that accountants should be having with their clients, though, and that goes back not to the Obama proposals here, but to this recently enacted emergency bailout legislation. They did do a lot of AMT adjustments with respect to people who were in the AMT situation as a result of ISOs, particularly going back to the tech boom and bust in 2000.
Right.
A lot of those people were caught with huge AMT bills and with stock of relatively little value to pay off those AMT obligations. And this most recent legislation really provided some substantial relief to those people, really abating any unpaid AMT obligations arising from those ISOs, and also expanding that AMT carryover credit to be refundable at a rate of to 50%, so you could really recover, even if you've already paid it, maybe recover that over 2008 and 2009. So if you do have clients who are in that situation, it's worth taking a look at and having a discussion with them about some significant relief that might be available.
Right, okay. So we've talked a little bit about individuals.
Right.
We talked a little bit about businesses. Let's talk about estate and gift. Are there anything that we should be thinking about? Any ideas? This is always the time we think about year-end gifting strategies. Anything that we should be doing there?
Well, under current law, anything would almost be better than current law, which we've got, an estate tax exemption of $2 million this year, rising to $3.5 million next year, and then the estate tax going away in 2010, and then returning in 2011 with only a $1 million exemption. So planning for current law is a real headache. Now, what Obama has proposed and even McCain had pretty much given up on the idea of estate tax repeal. So he was proposing something more generous, but really similar to Obama's, of basically a permanent inflation-adjusted, perhaps, exemption amount, and then finally settling on a tax rate. And what Obama would propose is basically going on a permanent basis with what we have next year in 2009, which is a $3.5 million estate tax exemption and a top estate tax rate of 45%. And the statistics show that would result in a tax being owed by only about 0.3% of all estates.
Right.
And going back to 2000, when this was first started to be played with, that would be a reduction of 87% of the taxable estates from 2000. So it would be a significant reduction in the taxable estates, and it does at least having that certainty going forward would certainly help planners. Now, Some existing plans might have to be looked at, because if you've got if you set up a family trust and a marital trust and you've got a $3.5 million exemption, and depending on your size of the estate, you may find that all the money is going into the family trust and there's nothing left to fund the marital trust, which might not be what you had intended. So,
if they're properly drafted,
if they're properly drafted, they should be flexible enough to accommodate that. But,
okay.
But certainly, once the law, it's probably, if you haven't looked at that in a while, you probably should see an estate planner anyway. But
sure.
Certainly, once the law settles in here, if it does settle in next year, it would be a good idea to revisit all this estate planning and making sure that
sure.
what you've got on paper matches the law going forward.
So the other I think big area that I wanted to ask you about, Mark, and I know you've got some things that you want to mention, but what about all of the energy-related things? Huge problems there and huge opportunities and lots of discussion. What's durable in the energy world?
Well, I think a lot of what Obama is really talking about in the energy context, perhaps doesn't really fall directly into the tax area, because I think, you know, he's talking about basically federal funding of alternative energy research.
Right.
For example, a lot of what's in this economic stimulus bill currently before Congress is not really tax focused, because they're talking about, you know, spending on infrastructure to get the economy going and that sort of thing, and that's some of what Obama's proposing. But as far as the tax front, we already have a couple of industry focused tax breaks. On one is creating alternative energy sources, and the other is producing electricity from renewable energy sources.
Sure.
And Obama has proposed expanding those tax breaks and just generally tax breaks without a lot of specifics for producers of things like wind, solar, biomass, and other alternative energy resources. Now, on the individual front, we already have some tax breaks for you know, making our homes more energy efficient as well. Obama's proposed an emergency energy rebate for home heating costs. That this was proposed when it was looking like home heating costs were going to go through the roof this winter. It may still be relevant.
Right. $30 a barrel.
Right, right.
Yeah.
It may still be on the table, but I think that was the impetus for it. This emergency energy rebate would have been $500 up to $1,000 for families, and that would have been paid for by a windfall profits tax on oil companies. And then the other thing, which we've also seen some of, is more tax credits for purchase of advanced technology vehicles. The one sort of tax provision in this economic stimulus bill currently before Congress would be an above the line deduction for interest payments and costs related to vehicle purchases. And Obama has proposed an additional $7,000 tax credit for purchase of what he calls advanced technology vehicles. This bailout legislation that just passed did add another vehicle credit for these things like the Chevy Volt that's supposed to, if GM survives, is supposed to go into production next year. That would be one of these plug-in electric vehicles, and that new credit was designed to provide a tax credit for purchases of vehicles like the Chevy Volt.
Sure. So, that takes care of the energy-related things. Mark, did we miss anything on the individual side, over on, you know, I know there's lots of different, we talked about employment taxes and all of that stuff, but what about just pure individual side? Anything there that we need to cover before we wrap up?
Yeah, I think one thing that's sort of interesting is, Obama seems to be latching on to the refundable credit as his tax break of choice. And in Clinton's era, it was the tax credit, and Bush, when he first started out, seemed to be fond of the above the line deduction. But Obama has a large number of refundable credits. There's a refundable make work pay credit tied to the payroll taxes of up to $500 per wage earner. There's a refundable mortgage interest credit of 10% of mortgage interest up to $800. He's got a proposal for a new refundable education credit of up to $4,000 that would be tied to 10 hours of community service if you took advantage of that credit. And a couple of existing credits, making them refundable, the Child and Dependent Care credit, he would expand that and make it refundable, and the Savers credit for low-income people, make it refundable up to $500 or $1,000 for a joint filer. So he seems to be very fond of the refundable credit.
Right. What a surprise. You know, that's... Well, it's, you know, there's certainly lots of opportunities here, I think, for tax practitioners to turn out being heroes with their clients. I think the most important thing is that I've picked up through everything that you said, Mark, is that this is the time that we should be talking to our clients, making sure that they're aware that these things are on the table, because none of them like to be surprised. And at least if we talk to them and tell them the things, we can't tell them necessarily that we know for sure what's going to happen, but we can help cut through some of that mystery and kind of end up being heroes regardless of whatever happens, right?
Right, and unlike a lot of what happens in the tax law that's just debated in the halls of Congress, we've had some of these tax issues debated in public forums ad nauseum for the last year between McCain and Obama. So there's probably a lot of clients out there who sort of know some of these issues and probably are debating them in their mind already. So it'd be a perfect opportunity for the accountant to walk in to help them out, because they're probably already worried about it. So.
Exactly, and you're not at all worried about you and your colleagues having enough to do for the next 6 or 8 months, Mark?
No, we're usually worried about election years, but with the downturn in the economy, even 2008 provided us with five significant pieces of tax legislation, but 2009 looks to be even better, I'm afraid.
we'll come back and maybe we can visit a little bit later post busy season, and we'll see how these things come out the other end. Mark, I want to thank you so very much for carving out time. I know you're a busy, busy guy, and there's lots of things going on at CCH headquarters there in Chicago, and you've got lots of different things to consider and stay on top of. So I very much appreciate your time. Thanks so very much for sharing with us.
Sure, and I hope your listeners find it helpful.
I'm sure they will. This has been Intelligent Business Ideas to Go, episode number 9. Thank you, Mark Luscombe. This has been Intelligent Business Ideas to Go, episode 9, Tax Planning After the Election.
For more information about the CPA Technology Advisor's other podcast programs, webcasts, and our e-newsletter, visit www.cpatechadvisor.com. To ask questions or leave comments about our podcasts, call 800-456-0864, extension 2106, or tune into future episodes where you're able to ask questions live via TalkShoe.com.